Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mudiwa Gavaza, and for today, we are continuing a conversation that we've had, on this platform a number of times, and that's around the issue of, cybersecurity, cyber crimes, and all that. But for today, we want to take it forward to look at the fraud aspect, to say that a lot of the time we talk about, the ways in which cyber criminals and hackers are able to get into our systems. But the conversation we want to have today is just around, what happens, on the other side of that. And one of the things that seems to be happening is that a lot of people end up being defrauded, of their money because of what's going on online. And so we're just going to be talking about that, what's actually happening. And then secondly, if you do discover that you have been defrauded in one way or another, what type of recourse, do you have, or what type of steps should you be taking to actually either recover what's been missing, or to at least mitigate something like that from happening again in the future. And to help us to unpack all of this, we are joined by Christo Sneeman, who is the National Director of Mazars Forensic Services, and also Vice President for the International Association of Financial Crime Investigators, Western Cape chapter, and just talking about, what's going on that side. Christo, greetings to you today.
Greetings, and thank you very much for inviting me to have a chat with you.
No, thank you so much for being with us. Now, usually we like to get a sense of the organizations that we're dealing with, but we know that Mazars is more on the side of accounting, etc. But I understand that you're helping to lead the effort on the anti-fraud side. So maybe you could just tell us a little bit about Mazars' interest in this particular area.
Yes, well, let me just give you a bit of background. So I'm a director for Mazars and in the Forensic Services Division. So we've got an office in Cape Town and in Johannesburg. And our clients that we focus on is in public and private sector. And and it reaches, all spheres of investigations, cyber investigations, as you mentioned, employee fraud related matters, public sector matters where we're dealing with procurement fraud, and the regulatory sector as well. So, ranging from the fraud and thefts of 500,000 going up to, millions, those type of investigations that we deal with. So obviously what we would do is, as a team for Mazars, we would be engaged by a client, and then we would do the forensic investigation. We would gather all the evidence. We will compile a report, we'll conduct interviews, and as soon as that is done, we will then submit this to our client. And if it is necessary for the matter to be reported, and just bear in mind that in terms of the prevention of corrupt activities and combating act, it is important that all matters above 100,000 rand must be reported to the police. So that's the PRECA Act that I mentioned. And then that's basically if it is required for us to go and give evidence at court, then we are called as an expert witness, and we give evidence on the matter. And obviously, for us, what is important for us at Mazars is that we want to get the necessary results for our clients. Most of the times you are grudge purchase. People, if they discovered fraud, they've lost money. Now they must now get somebody to pay for that. So we want to make sure that we get the results for our clients, and that's important for us to get the person that we investigated make sure that there's sufficient evidence for the disciplinary hearing, the person to be properly dismissed and suspended, and obviously the person to be convicted. We've had a couple of cases in court now, and it has been challenging for us due to COVID, and the suspects take chances. Then they cannot attend because they've had COVID. And then you arrive at court, and then the prosecutor and the court has an issue with COVID. And then the suspect says, no, their child has been in contact with somebody who has COVID. So the matters get postponed, but I must lift my hat for some, and I deal very often with the prosecutors here in Belleville Court. And, you know, I lift my hat for the guys. They are doing a tremendous job under extremely difficult circumstances.
So I think, just interject there quickly, but I like where you're going with this, because I think it's one of those questions that we never really ask, because we're always hearing about email fraud. We're always hearing about, you know, ransomware and all of that stuff, but we never really talk about the other side, which is the law enforcement side and also the prosecution side, you know, because we understand that crime is a big issue in South Africa, and the police is inundated with, you know, the violent physical crimes, the theft, all of that stuff that we see in the physical world. But in the online realm, maybe you could give us just some insight into how seriously, you know, those types of, fraud that's being perpetrated online, is it being given the attention, or is it being prosecuted at the rates that we see, I'm going to call them physical crimes, being done at? Or is it still an area that lawmakers and law enforcement are still trying to wrap their heads around?
Look, okay, let me first, I'm talking from experience, so let me put my hat on for the International Association of Financial Crime Investigators. So in the Western Cape chapter, my members consist of members of the South African Police Services, the Hawks. We've got prosecutors, bank investigators, insurance investigators, forensic auditors from other companies. So polygraph, people kind of polygraph. So, and I also sit on the board in the United States. And, you know, first of all, our whole initiative in terms of what we're doing, we are a nonprofit organization. So we, for us, networking is important. And for us, it's important to do the skills transfer to, you know, some of the police officials, you know, conducting their work, etc. So that is the basis of our organization. And coming back now to the issue about cybercrime, it's a massive problem. When the police join our meetings, you know, we do a roundtable discussion and we ask what is the biggest problem, you know, the cybercrime, you know, business email compromise, dating scams. If I sit on the board in United States and we do a roundtable discussion, you know, everybody that speaks there, from the FBI, from private investigators, Secret Service, dating scams, it's unbelievably, is a massive problem. And one of our members was actively, obviously cannot mention any names, but he was actively involved in the arrest with the 8 foreign nationals, it was in newspapers also, who based themselves here in Cape Town, in Parklands. So, and it was a joint operation between the Hawks and the FBI and the Secret Service. And they actually visited Cape Town. And, you know, it was a long, tedious investigation beforehand. And, you know, if you can just now understand, because these type of crimes have no boundaries, you know, so, and the people found Cape Town a very lucrative place to come and base themselves. You've got the mountain, you've got the sea. It's still a very safe environment. And, you know, the police is also in South Africa is inundated with a huge amount of work. If you think about the state capture, if you think about the looting, all the investigations that had to happen there, all the COVID-related fraud matters. So it is. And that's why we as an organization want to give assistance and try and help with these matters. But it is difficult because a lot of the crimes was perpetrated with people. For example, if you take this typical dating scam, that a lady, she's retired in the United States. She has got a couple of $1 million and she's lonely and now she's looking for companionship. And now she goes online and she meets this person who purports to be also somebody very genuine. And, you know, so it happens. And the people, unfortunately, they fall for this. They fall in love for these type, you know, in these conversations. And then, you know, the person needs money. Money is transferred. And so it happens. And they lose millions. And it's the same happens here in South Africa as well. And because, for example, you've got Bitcoin, this is how they launder their money, you know, and they're soon now to try and trace and find these funds is very difficult. These criminals are very far ahead of us. I don't know if you've heard about the group that's called the Black Axe. The Black Axe. They are the syndicate that's they've based from the US, and they're based here in South Africa and various countries in Africa. You can read up on the Black Axe. So, but look, I don't want to say anything further in terms of that, but yes, it is happening. Unfortunately, we do not know the extent of it because, you know, a lot of time people, when they fell for this scam, you know, they feel embarrassed about it and they don't want to talk about it. So, and you know, it's also difficult now to go and report the matter to the police. I don't think all the cases are being reported. We're still waiting for there's a new cybercrime bill we just wait for it to be signed into you know, into law. So that will also help the police and also help us with investigations. But my take on it is to say to people out there, for example, if you're dealing now with you're on a dating site and you found now the prince or the princess, yeah, be careful. Take a step back.
Yeah.
You know, make sure who you're dealing with. Mm. And also, you know, the business email compromise, I can carry on that. That's also a whole different situation that's been, people has been, it's been costing people dearly. You know, the criminals can also sit in Europe, for example. So if we need to do a typical investigation for, you know, say it's a dating scam or business email compromise, you need to find the source where the person is sitting at the laptop or computer and doing his fraud schemes from. You need to get the IP address. Now, that is a whole process. You need to now, if you report the matter, the police need to now subpoena the service provider, and then...
It's a whole thing.
It's a whole thing. So, you know, and then they could find that the person is sitting overseas or he's operating from an internet cafe. You know, that's also... And that's why it is difficult to investigate these matters. And, you know, therefore, again, prevention is, at the end of the day, the cure for this.
I actually, you know, like the fact that you've brought in things like the dating sites, because typically when we are talking to cybersecurity experts, they talk about, you know, the email compromise and, you know, the social engineering and, you know, things like ransomware. And I guess these dating websites, for example, is probably a form of social engineering, if not the highest level of social engineering, you know, at play. And, I think what makes this different from the typical way that we talk about it, because typically you hear that someone stole sensitive information from a company, and then from there they went and they raided, you know, people's bank accounts and then things like that. But in this particular case, where you're able to scam you can scam people into you yourself sending them money and all that. How big is this problem? Or because if I'm by myself and, you know, I find the so-called princess and she asks for 1,000 rand here, you know, it doesn't really seem like much, right? But, you know, from what you've seen, how big can a problem like this actually get? You know, are there any crazy numbers that you guys have seen out there?
Look, unfortunately, I don't have any numbers in terms of that. I only speak from experience on, you know, my dealings with my counterparts in the United States and also here in South Africa. But it runs into millions, you know, and of dollars. So I cannot really, but it is a massive, massive, massive problem.
So now the question then becomes, okay, I've been defrauded in whatever form this fraud is coming in, whether it's a dating scam like what you were describing, or, you know, some other vector, right? What recourse do I have? What are the steps, right, that I actually then take after that if I do realistically hope to recover something, if at all?
Unfortunately, if we're talking about cybercrime, so if we're talking about the dating scam situation, unfortunately, it is very difficult because as soon as you've transferred the funds, you know, the syndicate has already transferred the funds, or they've put it into Bitcoin, or they put it into other bank accounts. What they also do is they use legitimate people to go and open up valid bank accounts as well. You know, they take somebody from the street and say, you know, open up a bank account, and then the money is transferred. And so there's so many ways in which they can launder the funds. It is very difficult to, I know for example, on this particular matter where these foreign nationals were arrested, the United States government were successful in recovering some of the funds because they had they followed the trail of the funds, and so they were successful in some of it. But you know, if we talk about business email compromise, so what would happen, for example, is what the syndicates do is they would if some way they would download spyware in somebody's computer. You, for example, you are doing business with one of your customers, and you accidentally clicked on a link, and spyware is downloaded on your computer. And now what the syndicate do is they get access to your computer. They can see your username and your password. And they then also log in, and they can see the trail of email and communication between you and your client. And at a point of time, there's a payment needs to happen, and then they cut you off, and then they communicate with your client. They know how you write. They know there's a payment to be made, and typically what they would do is they would then say to you there's a change in banking details, and then the client accepts the communication and change of banking details, and funds due to you, for example, will be paid into a different bank account. So obviously, you know, you need to find the point of compromise, who was responsible for downloading the spyware. You know, who's going to be responsible for it? You need to phone the bank. Is the funds still available? Did the bank follow proper FICA processes when they opened the bank account? So there is, but you need to follow all of these and see. But what I've seen normally is as soon as the funds is paid into a bank account, they transfer it, or they, you know, they withdraw the cash. So it's, It is difficult to recover the funds.
Yeah, that actually sounds like such a dire state of affairs, you know, for people out there, and especially like what you said, especially because I think theft is one thing, you know, someone goes, they raid your account, which is something that a lot of people are falling victim to at the moment. You click on a link and you see a spoof website, for example, you know, which looks like a Standard Bank, an Absa, or whatever it is, and you think it's legitimate, and then, you know, they steal your money from that point of view. But where part of the magic is getting you to be the one who sends the money, it's such a tough area to be in.
But what, there's one key thing that you can do, and it's such a simple thing actually, and I've said it to so many times to some of our clients or victims, if I can say it that way, that if, for example, there's a request for change of banking details, don't just accept the email. Pick up the phone and phone your customer and say, you know, of your client, and say, you know what, I've received this request for change of banking details. Is it correct that is the bank account changed? And don't just accept the cell phone number that's on it. You know, try and phone your client on his landline. You know, try and make contact with him in another way. I've seen people transfer 2, 3, 4 million rand at a time into a different bank account, and then, you know, it's gone. But I see also, you know, that the banks are doing a lot. If for example, I'm at InvestNet, and every time that I'm about to do a transfer something, there is a page coming. Are you sure you are dealing with the correct person? Click on it. Yes. So the banks are trying their best to curb this as well. And again, you know, it's difficult for the police to do these investigations, because you're dealing with somebody that's unknown. You don't know where he is. It's an unknown third party. Unlike somebody who commits fraud within your business, you're one of your employees. And that's also, I mean, that's a whole discussion that I can have with you around that also. But yeah, you've got somebody that's working in your business. He works in the accounts department. He submitted a false invoice with his bank details, and you can investigate him. And, you know, he's got a bank account that you can follow and trace and hopefully froze the funds. But these cyber criminals are in the cloud. So, and it's, as I said to you, there's a whole process to go and get them arrested. But hopefully, with this action that has been taken, with these latest arrests that happened here in Cape Town, we send a message, and you know, hopefully we can see more of these type of arrests.
Perhaps as we are starting to round up the discussion, I want to come back to something that you were talking about earlier on, to say that because of your role, you know, outside of Mazars with the International Association of Financial Crime Investigators, and when you guys sit around the table and you've got people from different territories, you had already mentioned the dating apps aspect. Are there any other common any other common themes or threads that you guys are seeing around the world, or would you say that the ways that people are being targeted is sort of region specific?
Look, if I look, maybe what the other thing that I can mention also, if I look at the, I'm also a certified fraud examiner, and I'm part of the Association of Financial Certified Fraud Examiners, and they publish a report on a yearly basis. The last report was published in 2020, and what they would do is, what the Certified Association of Certified Fraud Examiners do is they take a sample of forensic cases investigated, and then of those cases they see what the trends are in terms of the forensic cases investigated. And apart from cybercrime, the biggest problem that we found also is asset misappropriation, and that is fraud and theft example makes up most of the cases, with an average loss in the region of $125,000. But then financial statement fraud, which makes about 10% of that, is the large matters with big, big losses, with an average of 1.5 million and then dollars in that region. So, yes, apart from the cybercrime, obviously fraud and theft is still rife, and obviously corruption. So, corruption is also one of the biggest problems. I'm just talking to you now. I just hope we can, we've had this excellent session with the Zondo Commission. There's so many evidence that's been given at the Zondo Commission, damning evidence. I hope to see that we're going to get these people that was mentioned and what was implicated arrested very soon. That will also obviously be a great help. So I'm now from cybercrime to corruption. One of our members is also, he gave evidence at the Zondo Commission, and we mentioned also, he said it's tough because you give evidence, and then you submit your affidavit, and the affidavit goes to the implicating party, and then for a week or two you worry, you look around your shoulder, you're worried that now this person knows that you've given evidence against him. So you worry about your safety a bit. So not only the arrests, we need to see the prosecutions. We need to see the people actually go to jail. And that is the message that we want to see. And I think that's what the message what South Africa want to see is, we want to see the people prosecuted. And they must feel it in terms of their financial pockets as well. So, we've got the asset forfeiture unit. So, I know they're doing also a great job in securing the assets, but the people must be prosecuted at the end of the day.
And perhaps that's a good place for us to actually end off, to say, what do you think it will actually take to see some of those prosecutions actually going up? One of the things that you mentioned at the beginning of this discussion was the fact that a lot of these criminals, a lot of these fraudsters are, miles ahead, of us right now. So I guess the question is about, how do you close the gap between their capabilities versus what law enforcement is able to do?
Look, I want to see, for me, what I think what will work good. And this worked. I don't know if you recall the days that we had the Scorpions, for example, where you had an accountant, you had a police official, you had a prosecutor, and you had a cyber expert working together. If we can get that workings again, where people are not separated, you've got a unit where you've got all those specialists in one. So if we deal with this one specific case, we sit in the same office. We've got the accountant, the person who can do a proper reconciliation, accounting, everything, put all the, make sure we can do quantification, bank statements, invoices, the police official who can do the subpoenas quickly, get the bank statements, he can do the arrest, he can take the affidavits. You get the prosecutor that's working with the guys, who can immediately give guidance to everybody and say, these are the matters that I need to prove in court. These are my elements. Let's focus on that. You've got the cyber expert that can immediately also do the subpoenas, get all the email records, go to court. So my view is that is, for me, really the way that we can get things better prosecuted. So it just takes a couple of people to have courage and do it.
All right. So that was us. We were talking to Christel Sneyman, who is the National Director of Mazars Forensic Services, as well as being the Vice President for the International Association of Financial Crime Investigators Western Cape Chapter, giving us some insight into what's going on in the world of fraud that begins through, online channels, talking about the fact that because of his experience with the international organization, they tend to see some common themes coming out in different parts of the world. And one of the ones that he highlighted was dating scams, you know, where people, purport to be the love of your life. And then along the way, they're able to get you to send them, you know, some amount of money. And that is an issue that is running into the millions, around the world. And he was saying that, part of the difficulty is the fact that, you know, once a person has, you know, of their own volition sent over money, it's a bit hard sometimes to then try to recover that. And especially when one thinks about how quickly the criminals actually then exchange, some of those ill-gotten gains into other things, such as your cryptocurrency assets, or move money, around the world into different bank accounts. You know, talking about a recent arrest, and he hopes to see more and more of that. But he says, ultimately, because of the gap or the lead that some of these criminal actors have, you really do need to have a concerted effort where you see law enforcement together with fraud specialists, together with cyber specialists, and also the prosecutors all working together to try and attack the problem would be a way to try and close the gap that some of the criminals already have on us. And then at the same time, just talking about the fact that from a tips point of view, if you do find yourself getting interesting requests, especially from some of your business partners, just pick up the phone and just check with them. Did you actually ask me to send money to an alternative account? So that's been it. Crystal, thank you so much for being with us today.
It's a pleasure, and thank you for having me, Mudiwa. I hope I can send a message to a couple of people out there.
Yes.
This is Mudiwa's Take.
A very fascinating discussion about what's going on in the world of online fraud. And what I appreciated about this is that it takes us away from the usual conversations, discussions, and rhetoric that we tend to have around issues of cybersecurity, specifically your email compromise and your ransomware, etc., because those are some of the big ways that people are actually losing out when it comes to cybercrime. But on the other side of that, you do hear that consumer piece as well, to say that there are other ways that criminal actors are finding their ways into consumer pockets, such as the dating scams. And those ones, it becomes so difficult, especially if you think that you've fallen in love with this person and all of that stuff, and you end up sending them money, or whether there's a cause, a charity, or a person that you think needs money where in fact they don't. And it's actually it's actually a criminal actor of some sort. So from that point of view, it does point to, the need for greater education. And I really like what he was saying about just a simple act of going to clarify certain things. One does understand that we exist in a world, where we have so much going on, and that's part of the whole issue of social engineering. You make something look like something else. I remember recently there was a couple of people that I knew that were actually receiving SMSs that looked like they were coming from Standard Bank, but if you read closely, it said .co at the end, as opposed to saying .co.za, and at the same time it says Standard Blank as opposed to Standard Bank. And it's little things like that. When you're busy, you're rushing, you just look at a text like that that comes in, you're clicking on links, you are giving your details. So all of this stuff is just taking advantage of human nature. You can tell that there's people that have gone out of their way to study how people act and work, and they're trying to take advantage of all of these little gaps that we have. So people, be aware, you know, sometimes just take a moment, step back, look at something critically, and just assess it for yourself before, you know, moving forward on sending money to someone who says they quote unquote need it, or, you know, clicking on that suspicious looking link. And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter with hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Muller. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. And this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.